19 and ask everybody to simmer down. Sorry about the... We don't need to actually have a thingamajigger.
You're convening us.
I'm convening us. That's all that's necessary, yep. Councillor Craddock, we are trying to get her on the phone as we speak and appreciate all of the work from staff in trying to make that happen. When it happens, let us know, or she will let us know from above. Now I will provide the safety briefing. Please note that we are on the third floor of the building. In the event of a fire or fire alarm, please exit out through the door in the northeast corner of this room, go down the steps to the second floor, and exit through the main entrance by the reception desk. We will meet in the courtyard outside that entrance. In the event of a medical or fire emergency, please call 911 and notify the security agent at the front desk. The nearest defibrillator is located where, Bob? Downstairs. On the steps leading from the reception desk down to Grand Avenue, and the fire extinguishers, where, Counselor?
Behind that, or on that wall, around to that side of the dais, but I'm going like this instead of...
There's also one to the left of the elevators across.
And there's one to the left of the elevator, so we are completely covered by a fire extinguisher. Please do not use that fire extinguisher in the case of a chemical emergency, though, because that will not work. All right.
I can't talk that fast anymore.
With that, we will move on to our first work session topic. We have Brian Moore and Alex Gilbertson from Parks here to talk about Willamette Falls Legacy Project update. Oh, it's Jonathan Blatcher.
The director.
We have been graced. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Council President Peterson, councilors, Jonathan Blatcher, Metro Parks and Nature Director. I'm not Alex Gilbertson, and I'm not here to talk about the potential bond either. I'm just here to introduce Brian Moore, who is the project manager for the Willamette Falls Legacy Project, and let him take it away and give you all an update on where the project is.
Thank you.
I think we had a presentation. Yay.
There it is.
Excellent. All right. Good afternoon.
No, go ahead.
Shall I just continue? I'll just continue on along.
And when you hear Councillor Craddock's voice, we will just praise. Yes.
Excellent.
Yeah.
As you heard, I'm Brian Moore. I'm the Willamette Falls Legacy Project Manager. My role is to lead the Legacy Project on behalf of all four of the public partners of the Willamette Falls Legacy Project. So, the Willamette Falls Legacy Project is a partnership between Oregon City, Clackamas County, Metro, and the state. It's a complex partnership that has been in place for more than 3 years and provides governance for a project that has been in the works for more than 8 years. Most recently, it has found itself as the prototypical example of what I think the bond is called large-scale community visions. And this newfound attention is pushing the project to fit inside a box that didn't quite exist when the project was conceived in 2012, when the conceptual design was developed in 2017, or when the master plan was approved by the Metro Council in 2018. That said, we're still making it work. So the project was built around a set of core values that drive all the decision-making for the project. These four core values are public access, healthy habitat, cultural and historic interpretation, and economic redevelopment. So we refer to these four core values as the project's real guiding light. And from the start of the project, going back to the Blue Heron Mill closure in 2011, the partners saw the future of the site as one that absolutely had to address all four of those core values equally. So the project team set out to procure a design team to develop a conceptual design. The team selected included Mayor Reed, Snohetta, and Dialogue. These three firms created a design collective, if you will. In partnership, we spent about a year and a half doing community engagement. I'm going to back up one. Sorry about that. We did a year and a half of community engagement, reaching out to community organizations and the general public to get input on the project. So the slides are a little bit out of order for the notes I had, but this is the project organization chart. You can see the partners group at the top. And we've got the Willamette Falls Legacy Project TAC, that's the Technical Advisory Committee. That's essentially the management from each of the four public partners. My role is the project manager there in the middle. I coordinate the TAC and report up to the partners group. Of course, the partners, Oregon City, Clackamas County, Metro, and the state, in very small writing. There's all the details of who those specific positions are. We also have our core team. That's our core staff team that's getting the work done. We have our outside stakeholders, which are some of the community groups and community members that I'll be talking about in just a second, and, of course, our consultant teams.
Councilor Craddock is joining us.
Hi, sir.
Councilor Craddock, it's Lynn.
I'm putting you next to me.
Okay, thank you.
If you have any questions, let me know.
I can hear you. Thanks.
Okay.
All right. Great to have you join us, Councilor Craddock. So we assembled we assembled stakeholder committees and focus groups to provide input on the program and operations, including river activities, habitat, the downtown Oregon City group, an interpretive plan group, folks that were focused on the public yard, that's a civic gathering space that was conceptualized for the Riverwalk. The nonprofit group that was originally called Rediscover the Falls, it's now called Willamette Falls Trust, multiple Oregon City boards and committees, and we led and continue to lead tours of the site for community groups that request it, also tours for the general public, and we continue to participate in community conversations about the status of the project when requested. And we're the featured lunch stop on the upcoming policymakers bike ride. One of the items that I wanted to talk about around the design is we refer to it as the Riverwalk, but the designers and the team has always acknowledged that it's more than a Riverwalk, and a great effort was put forward to help the community understand that, and that. The idea is really to have a design that integrates the private development with the public space, with the public access, and with access to the river, and to incorporate all four of those core values along the way. A critical part of our efforts to design the Riverwalk and to think carefully about the cultural and historic interpretation of the site, it was our efforts in tribal engagement. So beginning in 2013, the project reached out to the five Native Sovereign Nations with historic and current ties to the Willamette Falls. So that's the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde, Confederated Tribes of the Siletz Indians, Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs, and the Confederated Tribes and Bands of the Yakima Nation. That engagement included site visits in person and in-person meetings in 2013, 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018, and these meetings continue today. In addition to reaching out to the five Native Sovereign Nations, we reached out to local groups focused on Native American issues, such as NAYA. Though the process of gaining input has taken a slower pace than the pace of the overall project, Metro's recent outreach efforts with the Parks and Nature Bond has mobilized a lot of interest, particularly from our urban Native American community, which that interest is now at its highest since our project started. So we're reaching out to those groups again to schedule conversations with folks that previously did not get an opportunity to learn about the project and provide input. And so we're hopeful that the renewed effort will result in more productive conversations. So that effort will continue alongside our continued formal engagement with the five Native sovereign nations through the federal Section 106 permit engagement process. So that is a process that's facilitated by the Army Corps of Engineers, and it's related to federal permits that we need to secure for the project. So this project, the Willamette Falls Legacy Project, has already opened doors to the possibility of formal government-to-government relations between the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation and Metro, between the Confederated Tribes of the Grand Ronde and Metro, as well as with Oregon City and those two Native sovereign nations as well. It also catalyzed some engagement between Clackamas County and the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. We hope that our continued work will result in a greater recognition of the impacts of settlement and colonialism here, as well as the increase in cooperation between all of these different governments. Going back to the policymakers' bike ride, I had planned to participate and give tours, but it's likely that I won't be able to make it because I will be meeting with some individuals from the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation on that date to learn more about their personal connections and relationships to the Willamette Falls. So in addition to all of these efforts, and while all of this is happening, we're continuing to push to deliver on phase one of the project, as promised. Our goal is to break ground by next spring. We're continuing to coordinate with the property owner and the various parties that he is courting for deals. We're keeping the project within our budget and inspiring our partners to make financial commitments to the project on par with what would be committed should you refer and the public vote in favor of the Parks and Nature Bond this fall. And if you have any questions, I would be more than happy to answer them.
Councilor Stacey.
Brian, forgive my either lapse of memory or losing track of key events. Who is the current owner of the underlying property?
Now, the current property owner is a company called Falls Legacy LLC. The sole manager is George Heidgerken.
So nothing has changed.
That's correct.
Any other further questions?
I understand that the Willamette Falls and the Willamette Locks, you know, are on the opposite ends. How has the Willamette Locks Commission, how are their plans moving forward as a result of the proposed allocation for the Willamette Falls Legacy Project and the Parks Bond? So that securing of funding, how is the other side moving forward and trying to realize their vision?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the additional roles that I have as the project manager for the Legacy Project is to keep tabs on other activities and goings on around the falls. And so I've been attending the Willamette Locks Commission meetings, and my most recent knowledge is that they have a line item in the governor's budget for, I believe, $7 million to support the capital cost to get the locks fixed and repaired. There are folks that are still looking to fill the remaining, I believe, $7 million or so of their budget. At this time, that project is not... it's not part of the Willamette Falls Legacy Project, but it is a project of interest in the area.
I think we're going to get an update from Andy Shaw when he gets here from Hillsboro, an update on that, of what's going on in the legislature. So a little bit more updated information. Yeah. Councilor Lewis.
I have thoughts in the respect that Metro questions are sometimes statements, not questions, but also to respond to Councilor Gonzalez's question. Willamette Falls Locks Commission is really solely focused on the locks itself, but in terms of the shell of a building on the other side of the river, also a mill, also currently inoperable, there's a massive conversation happening on the Westland side, including two open houses, the first of which I believe is this week. And the second next month to talk about what PGE and the city can do in terms of master planning for that area, which has really difficult access issues, as kind of the base point for what can happen there, either industrial or re-envisioning that area. So lots in progress there. But yeah, I just wanted to thank you for the good presentation and for all the good work and the renewed interest and engagement with the tribes can't be understated or overstated. The Confederate Tribes of the Grand Ronde Salmon Festival celebration of the first fish 2 weekends ago was incredible, and the opportunity to really talk about access being restored was significant, and that tribal day, that day was important for that tribe, but that's replicated in the other tribes as well. The partnership that's displayed with the Willamette Falls Trust, I've reported back on the amount of investment that's going on in the private sector. They're super engaged, and I don't think we can move forward too quickly without them. So they're looking at the bond measure. They're looking at everything that we are doing in terms of planning for next steps once we know how the bond vote goes. But they're a really critical piece, and they're in the diagram, but you didn't really touch on them. And then finally, I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that in kind of spirit of promotion, there are window decals that say Willamette Falls Legacy Project on them, and you can put one on your car. Then every time you look in your rearview mirror, you smile.
I have one on my water bottle.
That's fantastic.
Another question, if I may. So if we break ground this time next year, more or less, yeah. How long would it take for phase one and two to be completed, more or less?
If I may separate the timing for phase one and two, our current assumptions around phase one is that we're 18 to 24 months of construction for phase one, and it's a fairly limited scope focused on an overlook building to provide a prominent view of the falls, which was a specific constraint on the funding of $12.5 million from the state that's restricted for construction costs. So that's our priority with those funds. Regarding phase two, in the event that the proposed parks bond is referred and passes, we would hope that we could tee up the design of phase two right away so that it's possible that we could enter into the phase two of the project without stopping work on the first phase of the project. And the phase two would focus on one of the major habitat restoration moves for the site, which is the removal of what's undoubtedly going to be at least tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of cubic yards of contaminated soil to restore part of the historic shoreline of the Willamette River at that location.
Councilor Dirksen.
Thank you. One of the key elements of the Riverwalk, as you say, is not just a walk, but it's how the river is integrated into the entire piece of property. So I would assume that, well, let's not jump into assumptions. Are phase one and phase two in any way, the design of them, dependent on what and when private development takes place on the property? Or is that something that we would look at future? How do we integrate our Riverwalk design into the private development that will take place there?
We worked with the property owner through the course of design, presented the design concepts to him numerous times over the course of the development of the designs. We then strategically identified phase one and phase two as key areas where we could achieve the prominent view of the falls and advance the habitat restoration or the integration of the river into the site without significantly impacting the potential for private development.
So the first time I was introduced to the falls was in 1992 when we came here to visit of whether we wanted to move here. And the people we were visiting, it was the first place they took us, and they had to take us up to Willamette Falls Drive and look down. And they were very excited. I'm like, it's an industrial area. Where's the falls? And then moving further, 1994, PSU project, Brian Crosgrove, now the Wilsonville city manager, was working on a project with the city of Oregon City. How do we reconnect to our river? Because they were completely disconnected. And then moving forward in time, Chair of Clackamas County, and this is one of two development projects we talked about for that part of the region that does not desire growth, right? Clackamas County not necessarily looking to expand the urban growth boundary, but looking at how do we do infill and how do we take the former landfill and redevelopment and how do we look at this amazing asset and use it to our advantage. And the connection there was always in Oregon City, how do you marry economic development with the historical recognition and not leave the past behind but move forward. And this is a beautiful place to be in, honestly, of being able to move forward with economic development, but start to reconnect people to the river, start to reconnect people to the past, the good and the bad, and put it into context. So I just want to say thank you to the councilors who have been here, who got us to this point, and the councilors who are pushing forward to keep moving on it, because this is a part of the region that has been overlooked for quite some time until they finally found that they were worthy of attention and asked for help. And so when they asked for help, you guys were there to basically pick it up and run with it. So thank you. It's much appreciated. And so thank you for all your time on it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Madam President, if I could append to your magnificent description of the process to date, I feel compelled to acknowledge that it was a former councillor, Carlotta Collette, who dragged me by the earlobe and probably other members of the council as well to pay attention to this extraordinary opportunity and worked very hard, yep, both in assisting personally the formation of the foundation or support the trust, as well as making sure this was on everyone's radar screen as we figured out what we should be doing in this region.
Good. Thank you. Moving forward. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to Acting COO Andrew Scott's update.
Great. Thank you. Actually, just wanted to outline for council today, talk a little bit about the budget process coming up over the next couple of weeks, make sure that everyone sort of understands the timing and different opportunities and when we're going to have different discussions. So we do have 60 minutes for discussion next Tuesday during the budget work session to talk about the budget and talk about any potential amendments to it. At this point, I think you've all received the list of amendments. We have some non-councilor amendments. So these are both substantive and technical amendments. We have four substantive amendments and 19 technical amendments. We'll spend about 10 minutes next Tuesday going over those. Staff will talk about through the substantive amendments and answer any questions you have on the tech amendments. These should be pretty straightforward, but we'll move through those relatively quickly and, of course, can answer any questions. The bulk of next Tuesday is going to be spent talking about the councilor amendments that we have on the table right now. We currently have 11 total. That includes both amendments and budget notes, and I think there's still some ongoing conversation about what form these things are going to take. The process for walking through those, if council is amenable to it, I will go ahead and introduce those amendments sort of one by one. After I introduce them, the sponsoring counselor will spend a couple of minutes talking about the amendment, the reason why they're bringing it forward, what they're hoping to accomplish with it, and then council will have a conversation about that particular amendment. And then we will do that for each one of those. And then council can give some indication, or actually the sponsoring council member can give an indication about whether that amendment should move forward for a vote on the 13th or not, based on the conversation next Tuesday. And then we do have, if we don't get through everything next Tuesday, we do have additional time on June 11th, but I think we are hoping to get through things on the 4th, and I think we have enough time to do that. And then, assuming we get through all of the amendments, we'll come back on the 13th for the vote on each one of those amendments. The staff amendments that we'll bring forward will be voted on block, unless there's any objections to any of them, but I don't anticipate those. The individual councilor amendments will be voted on individually. And then that all leads up to June 20th when we'll adopt the 1920 budget. So again, just to recap, discussion of all the amendments next Tuesday. There's a little bit of spillover time if we need it. We'll come back on the 13th to vote on each one of the amendments and then adopt the budget on the 20th.
And Mr. Scott, could you reiterate what we just talked about in our discussion prior to this about budget policy discussion? Because it was a little confusing to me. I've never had it bumped up against in this manner. So can we just clarify that we're going to have a conversation, but it's about upcoming?
Yeah.
It's
absolutely
looking forward.
So Metro has financial policies, and as with a lot of jurisdictions, they get essentially reaffirmed every year as part of the budget process. Now, we did not have a separate conversation about those financial policies during this budget development process. In retrospect, given a new council president, new councilors, it would have been a good time to just sort of go back through those with you. We're not proposing any changes to those financial policies, but they will come on the 20th with budget adoption. And these are, again, these are the policies that they really are binding on staff as we go through the year. A lot of them are very, very technical in nature. Council can change those policies at any time. Generally speaking, though, it's good to have some conversation about those, if there are any concerns or things to change. And so for next year's budget process, we'll bring this forward in the fall when we start the budget process, just to reiterate what's in those. And again, I'm happy to do that on the 20th as well. Specifically within those general financial policies, and there's a whole bunch of them, we also have an investment policy. And the investment policy calls for, making investments that are consistent with Metro's values. And again, we're not proposing any changes to that policy, but that'll also be coming forward for affirmation.
We're not proposing any changes to this current budget cycle, but we could have a discussion afterwards if anything comes up, because last minute changes would put us behind at this point, correct? We were to change our portfolio of investment decisions.
Yeah, I think if council wants to have a conversation about that, we can schedule some time to have a work session to really dive into it.
I was going to schedule an independent briefing, but
no, I think that's good. But I think the question is, how much room do we have to really change things now versus the next budget and getting through this and then having a full discussion as things come up? So can we, basically create a bike locker for it, not a parking lot?
Bike locker, yes.
But, right, put some flags on stuff as we go through.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we can come back and have that conversation really as soon in the new fiscal year as council is interested in doing that.
Councilor Dirksen, did you have something?
Nope.
Okay. You looked like it. Councilor Stacey.
You might stay awake.
I'm sorry.
Then I'll drop my not that funny comment.
Okay.
Sorry, I've been advocating for some time the use of the word bike rack as opposed to parking lot, but I will defer to locker.
I couldn't remember the exact. That was just me. Yeah. Either way, bike rack, bike locker. I want a full locker for my bike, not just anyway. All right. Thank you. Any other?
That's all I have.
All right. Awesome. Any councilor communications?
Yes.
Yes, Councilor Stacey.
My apologies. This is a somewhat lengthy description of a boisterous and productive briefing of liaisons to the solid waste and recycling program. 5 points. First, councilors are invited to tour the Columbia Ridge landfill on June 27th. Metro will provide bus transportation and host a lunch in Arlington with Gillam County commissioners. And in my experience the past 6-plus years, there's some pretty good lunches out there. Waste Management staff and Walsh Trucking staff will be joining us at that luncheon to hear about the value of our partnerships with the Greater Portland area, between the Greater Portland area and the communities of Gilman County. Bus leaves Metro at 7:30 a.m. on June 27th, and please reply by the end of this month to Will Elder. End of this month is coming right up. There's a proposal for the Regional Solid Waste Advisory Committee, the Regional Waste Advisory Committee, to replace the existing Solid Waste Alternatives Advisory Committee, sometimes known as SWAC, and it'll be presented to the Council on the 6th and the 13th. New committee most significantly provides a new membership composition. Major change is to increase the proportion of representatives of the public and community, and that means for management's sake, a necessary reduction in the number of industry representatives. You may be hearing about that from industry representatives, and we can get you more information as needed. The staff on June 11th at the work session will present a plan for the development of a regional solid waste system investment plan. More to come on that. The Innovation and Investment Grant Program is about to kick off its second year. An increase in the amount of resources available through that grant program and two new focus areas, one on recycling infrastructure improvements and food scrap recycling projects. And again, it's about a 50% increase in the total amount of money to be allocated. And smaller program grants will be available year-round and awarded on a rolling basis. Finally, there's a package of code amendments for Metro's Code Title V dealing with all this stuff. The first package will consider changing decision-making around system fees to delegate additional authority to the Chief Operating Officer rather than requiring as many actions as are currently required of Council, either by resolution or ordinance. Staff will be checking in with the Council President about whether there's a need for a potential work session on these changes before they come to the Council. But just as a heads up, these reallocate some additional responsibility to the COO level and require fewer pretty routine and mundane matters to come before Council for formal action. And that's the height of my competence on this subject, but I've got good notes.
Awesome. Thank you. Any questions for Councillor Stacey?
Can I leave it now?
No, sir. Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to briefly share that I've spent the last week in South Korea, which is why I'm looking a little haggard. We left Ulsan, South Korea at 7 o'clock Sunday morning, and I arrived in Portland somehow on Sunday at 2:30 p.m., even though I had experienced about 22 hours of life instead of 16, or 8, rather. Because of the 16-hour time difference. So my body is telling me that it's 6:30 in the morning tomorrow, and I, for some reason, didn't go to sleep last night. So
I can't imagine why.
Yeah, it's challenging. But the trip was really excellent. We got to see a lot of Korea, and I had some wonderful experiences. For instance, when we were coming back, Ulsan is a city in the southeast corner of the country, and we flew from Vancouver, British Columbia to Seoul, which is in the northwest corner of the country, and then flew from Gimpo Airport, which is right on the border with North Korea, down to Busan, and then spent, which is adjacent to Ulsan. And then when we came back, we actually took the bullet train from Ulsan to Seoul, and traveling clear from one end of the country to the other in about 2.5 hours at 185 miles an hour. It was pretty incredible. And but while we were there, we had the opportunity to take part in Ulsan's Rose Festival, which they are the Rose City of Korea. And we have a delegation from Ulsan arriving here on Wednesday afternoon to take part in our Rose Festival. I was there as part of the delegation representing the Ulsan Sister City Association here in Portland. And there was a group of five of us that went together, me, Young McGuire, who is the president of the association, and two representatives from the city of Portland. One is Martin Nicholson, who is the curator of the Hoyt Arboretum, and also Shukrat Arifdanov, who is Shuk to his friends, who is from the Office of Community and Civic Engagement for the City of Portland. And then Kathy Fastida, representing the Royal Rosarians, and myself, representing both the Rosarians and the Portland Metro Government. One of the things I learned while there is that their government systems are somewhat different than ours, the way the country is set up. The country is divided into provinces, but there are seven cities that are called metropolitan cities that have the same level of authority as provinces. And Ulsan is the smallest of those. Ulsan is about the same size as the Portland metropolitan area. And in many ways, the city of Ulsan, which is Ulsan metropolitan city, not just a city, is much more like Metro than it is like Portland. Ulsan is actually made up of five districts, each of which has its own council and takes care of internal matters within their districts. And then they have the Ulsan mayor and council that deal with things at a more regional level. So in many ways, the city of Ulsan is more of a region than a city. And I had the opportunity to have dinner with the mayor, and also three other local mayors were there as well. And we took part in a procession and then took part in the opening of their Rose Festival with fireworks and a concert. And they were very pleased to have us there. They have a rose garden that matches our own. It's different, but very large, and they're very proud to be the Rose City of South Korea. And was altogether a terrific experience. I took loads of pictures, as did my compatriots who were there. We will work to assemble some sort of a slide presentation that we can share some of the things we saw. 1,500-year-old Buddhist temples and brand new Hyundai Ioniq coming off of the factory floor at their Hyundai factory in Ulsan, which is the largest automobile factory in the world. And it's just down the street from Hyundai Heavy Industries Shipbuilding, which is the largest shipbuilding center in the world. And Ulsan being an extremely industrial city. So I'll be willing to share that at a later date when we have something assembled. But I wanted to just explain where I've been and why I'm back.
Awesome.
Or mostly back.
Mostly back. Yeah. Anything else? Anybody else? All right. I did mention prior that there was a conversation going on outside government with folks interested in permanent supportive housing that have come together. I think we're going to be asked to be on that. I've asked Councillor Chase to be my alternate and for me to be the representative for now on that committee. They are specifically looking at how to either have a region-wide or individual county conversations about moving forward with permanent supportive housing funding. So just wanted to give you a heads up on that. And then Andy Shaw is 36 minutes away coming out of Hillsborough. So I think between Andrew and Paul and I, maybe we can do a quick legislative update. The first thing that Randy wanted to make sure that we considered and give him direction on is signing onto a document in support of the clean air or the
energy.
The carbon, the cap and trade bill with our partners. And I don't have any more information on that, but just a letter of support. So I think we can give him direction on that. Did he have another ask of us? Okay, well, you look that up. He was talking fast because our bill that we were working on in terms of the convention center events or catering.
Oh, yep. The
public contracting and the commission for the blind at public venues.
Thank you. I don't remember the names. You're good. Do you have the bill number too?
3431.
Wow.
Passed on the floor.
It was on the floor right now?
No, it's already passed.
Yeah.
And 57 A's, 3 nays. carried by Representative Warner.
And now it goes to the House?
Senate,
okay. Awesome.
Yeah, very good.
So it's moving. And then our vehicle registration fee request is moving forward as part of a technical package to HB 2017 still. So it's scheduled, I believe.
Scheduled? But yes.
It's in Ways and Means, and it's going to be scheduled. And then, was there one more thing? Oh, Willamette Locks, that's right. Thank you. As I understand it, the DAS has tentatively agreed to be the holder of the Willamette Locks until an entity can be found, but they're going to have a very distinct number of time.
DAS, yeah, sorry.
Department of Administrative Services.
I agree.
At the state level. Yes, staff are now going to be.
Same, though.
DAS is willing to tentatively take this over. The governor's office is still saying she does not want the state to have ownership of the locks. But it's not only moving forward to DAS for temporarily, but a full 14 point whatever million in funding is also on the table. So good news on that temporary hold and movement forward on funding. So that's great news. I don't think there's anything else. Alternative Daily Cover is still continuing conversations in committee, but probably won't make it out of committee. So, any questions for the non-expert on legislative agenda? Nope.
Capable backup.
Yeah, with capable backup.
Well, you know where to find
it. My perception is that the dispute over the Alternative Daily Cover is based more on misunderstanding than any real difference in opinion.
Yeah, and how yes, there you go. Agreed. All right, seeing no further discussion on any of these topics, we are adjourned, and the Metro Council will now move to Room 301 to meet an executive session pursuant to ORS 192.660 sub 2 sub 8 to consider the employment of a public officer, employee, staff member, or individual agent.